we get the hour underway by welcoming back to the program an actor, author, and activist. You know him for his several seasons as BJ Honeycutt on MASH, as Dr. Jim Hansen in Providence, or maybe like me, is Scott Banning from Days of Our Lives. We're happy to welcome Mike Farrell back to the program. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Rich. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for coming back on with us. Do you still have the quarantine beard?
I do, indeed.
I got a glimpse of that. It was so wonderful to see you and Loretta Swit on Alan Alda's podcast recently.
We had fun. Alan thought it would be nice to take some time and give some kudos to the frontliners who are doing so much for us in this awful situation. And we thought, getting together is always a fun thing to do. So we thought, why not?
Yeah, it was just great. And we were reminded, among other things, that many of us learned about how to wash our hands properly from being good students of MASH.
Yeah, that was funny. Somebody did a very interesting cut of some of the episodes.
Yeah,
things that were appropriate appropriate lessons for the meantime. Unfortunately, the meantime seems to have stretched and is becoming now time.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you doing? How are you and your family doing during this situation?
Thanks. We're doing well. We're obviously frustrated by having to shut down and close everything, but we feel very lucky to be able to still maintain contact. The Zoom process has become the way to stay in touch with some people that you don't have the opportunity to actually see face to face, and as you know, I'm sure people are able to gather as long as they maintain safe distances and wear the proper attire and masks and what have you. So I see my children periodically when they come and bring groceries for us because they don't want us to go to the store. My wife has a compromised immune system, so it makes it somewhat edgy for us to entertain or to do the kinds of things that some people are free to do. And I have to be careful about going out because who knows what I could bring home. So we're trying to stay hunkered down.
All of us trying to do the right thing out there. But I did see that there are at least some conversations about television and film production resuming. Does that seem like a good idea?
I heard about that. I haven't seen any actual indication that it's happening, but people were talking about the ways in which it could be done, and it would really require, it seems to me, almost a quarantine setup where everybody who comes into this situation, cast and crew and everybody, would have to be tested and make sure that they're clear of the virus. And then they'd have to be willing, it seems to me, to be quarantined together for the period of time that they were working. And that's not going to be a simple thing to take for people to do.
Mike, what does it say about where we are as a nation that the simple act of wearing a mask to protect other people has become politicized?
Well, yes. I mean, we're in a very different and very odd place, I think, in our country. In my view, the president has demonstrated a kind of unwillingness to honor norms and he does away with safeguards that are built in through tradition, not by law. And as a result, it's become a suit yourself, potluck situation where people can just take or do or feel and say whatever they choose because the man who is heading the country feels the freedom to do that. And I think it's a very dangerous time, but it's certainly a frustrating time for those of us who care about the country.
And I can understand the desire of people to have less government and less government intrusion in their lives, but this pandemic has shown that there are some things that the federal government is good for, and providing some sort of national leadership would have, I think, been much more preferable to this every state for themselves approach.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Rich. I mean, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, people didn't say, Well, what are you going to do, Connecticut, or what are you going to do, Maine, or what are you going to do, Michigan? We as a nation responded. And I think when a disease, an invisible threat, not only threat, an invisible demon comes our way, and not only threatens the lives and the livelihoods of all of us, but kills over 120,000 Americans in the last, 4 months? It seems to me that a little inconvenience is not too much to ask for people who otherwise would have certainly stood up and done what was required of them by the government in order to face an enemy. This is an enemy that I think needs to be dealt with in much the same way.
Do you, after all this, do you still feel that people, or Americans specifically, are basically good people?
Of course I do. I think people are good, basically good people. I don't think it's limited to being Americans. I think people want the same fundamental things in life, and I think they do the best they can in terms of being fair, in the terms of the way they go about things. That's probably best demonstrated when we have a weather calamity, a tornado, a flood. You see neighbors reaching out to neighbors. You see people who normally wouldn't even think twice about taking in a stranger doing just that when the circumstances provided say, look, humankind is in trouble here. People who are our brothers and sisters, whether we sometimes want to accept that or not, are in danger or are inconvenienced to a degree that is threatening, we respond to that. And I'm a great believer in the decency of people and the willingness of people to put themselves out in support of others.
We're talking with Mike Farrell here on Downtown. We're also in the midst of a fight, and Americans taking to the streets to support social justice in this country. And we've seen this before, but I don't know. It feels different to me. Do you think that we've turned a corner in the awareness of the American people that we have to make some positive change?
Yes, I do. I think what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd's murder was so obvious. I mean, it was so raw. It was so visible with that officer with his hand in his pocket and a kind of unconcerned dare you to speak if you disagree with what I'm doing look on his face. I think it was televised not only across the country but around the world. And I think for Americans, it was a shock. We have two of those of us who are not people of color have too often found ways to accept the explanations that have been given for the kind of injustices that have occurred too many times between people in authority and people of poor people and or people of color. And I think it sort of writ large for everyone that this is a real phenomenon in our country. And we are guilty of having ignored it for far too long. And I think what we're seeing in the streets and what we have seen since that time are people saying, enough. It's time that we begin to try to right the wrongs that have been done for so long to so many, and we've looked the other way.
When you talk about systemic racism in this country, you can't help but talk about something you've fought against for several years, and that's the death penalty, which, as we know, disproportionately affects people of color and poor people.
Of course, yeah. There was there have been large editorials that have been done recently making that connection for people. I think if you look at our criminal justice system, you'll see that most of the people who suffer as a result of the wrongheadedness of some of our system are the poor and people of minority groups. And the statistics are clear that in the United States, the people who are subject to the death penalty are mostly, today, I think the majority of people on death row are people of color, and the next number are the poor. And the wealthy people who can afford a defense don't go to jail, much less go to the death chamber. So I think this is a relatively speaking a small part of the recompense that is going to be needed in this country, and that is to do away with the things that what people don't understand is that do harm to all of us. The death penalty, in my view, actually was stated by one of the founders of this country, Jeremy Rush, who said the capital punishment demeans everyone associated with the act. And I think that's right. It brutalizes us all.
When you hear people, and you've always done a great job of making your point, but in a way that is not offensive to other people, but what do you say to those folks who see all of these protests as some sort of assault on traditional American values?
Well, I think we have to, it takes courage to sort of take a look at what you just described as traditional American values. I think people have said to themselves, this is the way it's been for all these years, and why should we change it? Well, if you examine it and you find that leaving it as it has been, today, for example, we're finding people taking down statues of people who were effectively traitors, people who fought against this country, fought against the laws of this country in order to defend the idea of human slavery and maintain the process of human slavery. So we have just, you know, the day they tore old Dixie down is sung by Joan Baez, one of my favorites. But I think the sort of historic cleansing of things like the Confederacy, the whole idea of the Confederacy, is something that's been done because we don't really want to get into the taking of responsibility for some of the things that we've allowed done ourselves or allowed to have happen by others and as I said before, looked the other way. So I think good old American traditions are easy to defend, but I think we have to be a little more thoughtful about what it is that they actually mean before we are quick to defend them.
And when people talk about destroying history, I chuckle a little bit because, as you know, I'm a history teacher in high school, and the history that I teach is very different than the history I learned as a student all those years ago. I was never taught in school about the killing of Emmett Till. I was never taught in school about the Tulsa Massacre. Those things were left out of the history that we were given.
Sure, we were told that George Washington never told a lie.
Right.
I mean, there is that tendency to kind of want to whitewash, forgive the use of the pun, but to kind of whitewash history and just not get into those things that are difficult and that it requires some explanation and beyond explanation requires some contrition. But it's time. I think when you've got so many people in such distress in this country today, aside from the COVID-19, you've got people live in distress just because of the color of their skin or just because of the fact that they can't afford to live in a home, then it seems to me that we have to look at what America is really about and pick it up, take responsibility for what's wrong, and fix it.
What's our way forward out of this? We seem so very polarized as a nation. How do we get past this and begin to heal this divide?
Well, there are any number of things. I'm not sure how political you want me to get, but we have a big vote coming up in November. I think the country is in a very, very, very sad state, and it can be changed, but it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of good people doing the right thing and accepting the responsibility of citizenship. I have a lot of views you probably don't want to get into.
Oh, no, you let it go, Mike. You let it go. We need this.
Well, I'm a believer that President Trump is is not well. I think he's got a very serious psychological problem, and it means to me that he's not the liar that people claim he is. I believe he thinks he's telling the truth, but whatever the truth is of the moment is what suits him, and I think that's a part of a psychological illness called malignant narcissism. And it's something that some psychiatrists have had something to say about. But I think the danger he presents to us is seen, is visible every day. And I think we have to change the leadership in this country, because he's being used in some ways by people who see that he can put forward their agenda in a way that they would not be able to get away with it otherwise. So I think we have a lot of hard road ahead of us in terms of how we reestablish who we are in the world. I think our nation has fallen in the eyes of people the world around us, and has fallen in the eyes of many of the people in this country. And I think, I frankly just finished writing a piece that I'm putting out just as a thought, and that is that I think it is not acceptable to the state of mind, state of being of the president, President Trump, to accept defeat. I think he will do anything he can to not allow himself to be defeated in this upcoming election, and that means potentially cheating and lying and stealing and doing a lot of bad things. But it also offers the possibility that if he sees that he is not going to succeed, I have a feeling that what he will then, in order to save himself and his necessary psychological construct, he will resign and arrange with Vice President Pence for a pardon that would be necessary.
We were just talking about that scenario here yesterday, but you know, I'm concerned about the integrity of the election. I'm concerned with voter suppression, and I guess what saddens me, along with everything else right now, is I grew up at a time when you respected both parties, and there were good people in the Republican Party. I think back to the Everett Dirksons of the world and others along the way that you could look up to, and they might have a different approach than you had, but everybody wanted the same result. And to me, what's frightening in this scenario we're seeing now is the willingness of some people in the president's party to allow him, and especially the attorney general, to bend, twist, and some would say crush the rule of law.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more, and that's one of the great damages that's being done to us. And when I said we've got a hard road ahead, it's going to take some significant time and some really heroic actions on the part of some very courageous people to reestablish who we are. But I think part of it comes from the threat we're under in terms of COVID, because everybody kind of gets a little more willingness to take a look at what's significant in their lives now as a result of this. People, we know that it strikes the first responders, people, many of whom are people of color and Latinos, people who don't have the comfort that I frankly have, where I can locked down in my house with my wife and be taken care of to the degree that we're safe. Some of those people don't have that. And I think that reality has heightened everybody's willingness to kind of take another look and recognize that we need to make some changes, some very serious changes in this country. So I think I'm with you. I fear that those people who are a little outside the norm. You mentioned the Attorney General. I think he's a danger to us, and he has this concept of the essentially the kingship that the president maintains. And I think there are many people, as I said earlier, that that have tolerated this man and what he's done because it advances their personal agenda. But I think that there are enough of us now who recognize what has happened and painfully accept some responsibility for allowing it to happen, and are now going to see to it that that things change. My own view is he won't allow himself to lose, and I think that if it becomes clear to him that he's going to lose, he'll resign.
I sure hope so. That gives me a little hope, Mike. Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And I think the requirement would have to be that he would make a deal with Vice President Pence to give him a pardon, that he would be pardoned for anything that would be, because he won't allow himself to be put in prison or charged with some of the crimes that I think people know that he's been guilty of. So I think it's an out for him, and I think he's too wily not to recognize it. But that's only if things begin to look as dismal as they appear to be beginning to look for his reelection.
Mike Farrell with us on Downtown. And Mike, before we let you go, can we throw a couple listener questions your way?
Please, sure.
This is a great question. I've wondered this myself. I mentioned the show Providence. I love that show. Wonderful series on NBC. Why hasn't that ended up in reruns somewhere on cable? That was such a good series.
It's a good question. I don't know the answer. I agree with you. It was a wonderful show. You probably remember our conversation earlier on where I'd done MASH and I didn't see the reason to do another
right.
with less than that. And I got that script and I remember saying, this is too good. It'll never go on the air. And my agent said, well, nonetheless, they want to meet you. And I said, okay. And we met and they said, yeah, it's going to go on the air and we'd like you to do it. And I was thrilled to go back to work, and I was thrilled to work on that show with those wonderful people. We were canceled too early by the executive in charge of NBC at the time because he had another show he wanted to put on the air, which of course failed. And it may be that there are not enough episodes for them to syndicate, so that may be why it never has been repeated. But I agree with you. I think it's a wonderful show and deserves more than it got.
Also, somebody wanted to know, and we know how close the MASH cast continues to be, but was there ever a time when you and Alan weren't getting along personally, and how did you work around that to do scenes together?
No, Alan and I became friends immediately, and because of his generosity and because of his extraordinary spirit, we became friends immediately. We remain so today. The cast was really extraordinarily homogenous. We just people just got along, and I think I remember coming back from one of the hiatuses. You know, after every season, we'd have a few months off. And I had done some work in different parts of the world and came back, and I sat down with Alan and I said, are you getting what I'm getting out in the world about the way people respond to this show? And he said, yes. And he said, it really gives me some concern that we have to double down and make sure that everything we do and everything we say lives up to what makes us proud about the show. And Everybody got on board and said, there's something here that we're doing that is to which people are responding the world over, and we can't fail them. So we just got to be doubly sure that we do this with the most integrity that we possibly can. I mean, we didn't know until after the show was over that it was going to become a social phenomenon, but what we did know was that it was enormously popular and very powerful in terms of the impact it had on people.
Well, and that goes for the cast. We've had Loretta on. We had Jeff Maxwell on recently. And you're just, again, looking back with such fond memories, not just at the show and the work that was done, but those deep personal relationships.
Indeed. Indeed. Loretta and I call ourselves brother and sister. Alan and I will always be very, very, very close friends. And the same, you know, Gary left. Gary is now on our email chain. And we've lost, unfortunately, Harry and Bill and David and God, Larry. It's sad to be at this age and realize that that which was is no longer in too many ways. But it was a gift that I will always cherish. And having been there and having been able to be part of it makes me the luckiest actor that ever walked.
Well, it's always a gift for us to get to talk with you, Micah. Thanks, as always, for being so generous with your time and carving out some for us. Be well. Stay safe, you and your family, getting through all this. And we'll talk again down the road.
Thanks, Rich. I'd love to.
Mike Farrell with us on Downtown.